This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go out to our progressive guest line. Trevor Sikkema is joining us, Pro Football Focus, on the first round of the NFL Draft. How are you, Trevor?
I'm doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, let's start with the New York teams. Five picks combined between the Giants and the Jets. A lot of people have graded them very well. How did you grade all of those selections that the New York teams had last night?
I thought they were great. And look, anytime you've got multiple picks in the first round, it's kind of a cheat code for grades, right? Because you're increasing how much you probably like your haul unless you're picking players that are massive reaches, which I don't think either of these teams did. I love the haul by the New York Giants. I know they really wanted to trade back with one of those selections. I know that Joe Shane, the general manager there, was looking to move back, try to get some capital from next year's draft, but it just didn't see, as we saw the night evolve, didn't seem like any team was willing to give up future capital. They'd move stuff later in this draft, but they didn't really want to dip into 2023. And so once that was the case, the point of the draft is to pick good players that you need. And Joe Shane did exactly that at 5-7 by staying put. And then, of course, what the Jets were able to do. I thought they did a great job navigating what this draft was going to hold for them. And what I say by that is they came up with a draft strategy that really seemed to work. Once Derek Stingley went off the board at number 3 overall, they were kind of sitting in a situation where they go, hey, we've got a cornerback need. We've heard lately over the last 72, 48 hours that a lot of corners are going to go in the first round of this draft. So you can't really wait on one for the early second round, maybe like we planned before. So you take Sauce Gardner off the board at number 4. You go get a wide receiver you absolutely love, still near the top of the class at number 10, and then they get aggressive to go get their edge rusher, still with faith in Mekhi Becton on the offensive side. So I love it because both of those teams went in with a draft strategy and came out with very strong results. Really good process from both of those New York teams.
There were obviously trades to move up in this draft. There were a number of teams that did that. I didn't feel that there was the big move. Did you get a feeling any team did that on Thursday night?
Well, I think that, the Lions certainly did, moving from 32 to 12. I did not expect that to happen.
And right. That's probably the only one, right?
Right. And essentially, I mean, they gave up the 34th overall pick. That's it? They gave up the 34th overall pick to move up 20 spots. That's pretty unheard of. Saints, when they traded up for Marcus Davenport, they had to give up a future first-round pick to move up 13 spots. So, man, it never would have saw that coming from the Lions. Anytime there was a trade-up, I looked at teams like the Green Bay Packers at 28, the Kansas City Chiefs at 29, and while a lot of people said, oh, they're a prime candidate to trade up, I said to myself, yeah, but are they really going to get into the teens? Because that's a hefty price that you might have to pay. Sure enough, the Lions go all the way back from 32 up to 12, go get Jameson Williams, and it didn't cost them that much. So loved it from Brad Holmes.
We do have years where a certain position is sort of dominant in the draft. Some years we were loaded with quarterbacks, some years, but this year it was wide receiver. But let's try to go big picture here, if you can. Is there something going on within the collegiate game that is producing these kind of players that they are getting drafted this high in the draft?
Well, it's not just collegiate players. It's high school as well. The whole culture of football is changing. It's not this ground-and-pound game anymore. It's just not. We're seeing that even in high school football, you're spreading things out. You're going 4 or 5 wide receiver wide. 7-on-7 camps with no trench play have become more prevalent than ever, and you're just developing more wide receivers. There's more of a demand to get more wide receivers onto the field in high school. Therefore, there are more wide receivers who are polished and better at their craft going into the colleges. There's more to pick from, there's more to recruit, and then there's more to play once you get there. We're seeing air raid and spread also be pretty prevalent in college football over the last couple of years, lighting up scoreboards left and right. And because of that, the pool of players at wide receiver is not only deep, but polished and talented. So a lot of these guys who maybe in a different era would have grown up and played running back, played safety, played corner, played linebacker, whatever it is, they're playing wide receiver. They're sticking with wide receiver at a young age, and that's the position that they're playing, and that's what they're getting picked to be in the NFL. So it's just, I think it's always going to be a deep position moving forward because that's where the landscape of football is.
it is a good time to be a wide receiver in this league. Obviously, now they're making $30 million a year, but it seems like just on an economic standpoint, if you have a deep position, if you can do what Tennessee did, which is just take a guy that is getting ready to get out of his deal, get ready to get paid, and you don't have to pay that one because you can match that level with somebody in the draft. If more teams do it, less and less are going to get $30 million, correct? Or am I missing the economics?
No, it's going to be a fascinating development what we see with wide receivers over the last couple of years because, you know, you look at what the Tennessee Titans did last night. Yeah, it helps their checkbooks. Does it help their wins?
Sure.
I don't think it does, right? Because
right.
the Titans just got the number one overall seed last year. All of a sudden, I'm looking at that roster and I'm thinking this is massive regression here from the Titans, and they can maybe go to sleep at night thinking that their books are a little bit more solid. They've got a little bit more cap space, but why do you have cap space? You have cap space to pay good players. That's what you have it for. And I feel like there's just always going to be a balance between that kind of a strategy, not drafting wide receivers. I mean, shoot, I was reading all sorts of reports leading up to the draft of, hey, I know it's deep. A wide receiver could go later than you think. These teams don't necessarily want to pay a premium because there's so many wide receivers out there. And all we're seeing instead is wide receivers getting paid $25 million a year left and right, and all those receivers going in the top 20 of the draft last year. So you would think in theory the market is going to shift to where you're a little bit slower on paying wide receivers, slower on drafting premium guys, but that is absolutely not the case right now.
Yeah, let's point out that the two guys that did get moved yesterday both got really nice deals from their landing spots. So it really, you're absolutely right. On one hand, people are like, yeah, I don't have to do this. And then other teams like, but we'll be more than happy to do that for you. So I want to ask you about Kenny Pickett of the Steelers. The quarterback class wasn't as hyped up as it was last year. Nevertheless, he is a first-round pick by the Steelers who are looking for the next franchise quarterback. Are the Steelers reaching a little bit with this guy? I know he's a local guy, so it does make a little bit of sense, but Malik Willis was on the board. People did like Desmond Ridder. Was this a little bit of a reach by the Steelers?
Yeah, Malik Willis was on the board and is still on the board. That's
yes,
what's crazy
that's right.
to me. And you know, we look at this situation where I think everybody went into this quarterback class, and when I say everybody, I mean people who were evaluating this class, and they looked at the quarterbacks and they said to themselves, oh, man, it's not a good year. It's not a good year. A lot of people didn't even have first-round grades on any quarterback in this class, but we knew the NFL was going to be different. We thought to ourselves, okay, yeah, but the NFL is going to draft these quarterbacks, so we projected 2, 3, even 4 into the first round, and it turns out the NFL thought like the media did, that not a lot of these guys were worth it. In fact, only one was worth a first-round pick. I think it is extremely telling that not only did Kenny Pickett not go as QB1 until number 20 overall, but no team traded back into the first round to go get one of these guys, and that fifth-year option on their contract. I think that's extremely telling. But in terms of Kenny Pickett, he was not who I expected to be the first quarterback off the board. If you're going to take a chance on one of these guys, I would have taken a chance on a guy who's got a little bit higher of a ceiling. I get the hometown effect with the Steelers. It seems like they were leaning into that pretty hard. It's not the pick that I would have made. And not that Kenny Pickett is a terrible quarterback. I don't think that. But I think his ceiling is limited. And certainly for a team like the Steelers that already has Mitchell Trubisky on the roster, who I think is going to be very serviceable for them, how much better do I believe Kenny Pickett's going to be the Mitch Trubisky? I'm not convinced it's going to be a whole lot. So that's why I felt like they would have taken a little bit bigger of a swing at a home run with a guy who had a little bit higher of a ceiling than Kenny Pickett. But in the end, they ended up going with the hometown guy who doesn't have to move too far because he played
yeah.
the same stadium in college.
And it doesn't feel like the organization, and again, things can change, but it doesn't feel like the Steelers organization is like Arizona, which is you get Josh Rosen and then you bring in a new coach who likes Kyler Murray better. They will ride with Kenny Pickett for a little bit, but if the draft class is better next year, maybe the Steelers were better off trying to find the franchise quarterback that year, let Mitch Trubisky do his thing, and find the better quarterback in year two.
And that was sort of, you know, that was kind of the strategy of, okay, well, then why are you spending 20 overall on Kenny Pickett? And look, something that I liked with the Pittsburgh Steelers is everybody knew they needed a QB. And anytime that's the case, it's dangerous, right? Because a lot of people, they'll demand a higher price for a trade. They won't really want you to move because they know how desperate you're going to be. The position is so important. The Steelers got out of this draft with the guy that I guess they believe is QB1 by staying at 20,
right,
not having to move capital for next year to go up and get their guy. And I think that that is definitely important because it at least opens the door for them to maybe get Kenny Pickett in there. If he has a great year, okay, great. But if he doesn't, then they can wait and maybe dip into the quarterback class next year, like you said.
I used to joke about how doing this for a while, I used to get calls from people that would say, like, you know who should be the number one pick? There's a running back from Chadron State you've never heard of. And I'd go, oh, okay, I get it. You're trying to be the smartest guy in the room. But Cole Strange out of Chattanooga, is Bill Belichick still trying to be the smartest guy in the room? How do you make sense of this?
Well, like I said this on my podcast last night, that's the most wild pick of the night, no question. It's not even close. But who am I to question the greatest head coach of all time, right? So that is the big caveat in it all is you look at who made the pick. If any other team makes the pick, I think we are nationally killing it.
I agree, we are completely roasting
them this morning. But I think that everybody has to go, wow, that was a crazy pick. But it's Belichick, right? And Cole Strange, fantastic athlete, incredible athlete. You look at what he was able to do, his movement skills, unbelievable from Tennessee Chattanooga. So you love that kind of stuff. You think you're getting a really good football player, and the Patriots have developed developed offensive line very, very well over the last couple of years. Now, a lot of people would say that's the tip of the cap to Dante Scarnecchia, who is their longtime offensive line coach, who is no longer there. But you figure that the principles and the systems and everything are hopefully still in the building. And so, look, if Cole Strange was going to go to any team in the NFL and really validate being a first-round pick, I would have to say the Patriots are one of them.
Trevor, great stuff, man. Good conversation. Thank you so much for getting up early on a busy day and joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course, guys. Draft week, we don't sleep too much, so
right.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Trevor Sigma again, Pro Football Focus. Good stuff. On our Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance, bundle and protect today under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We'll come back, wrap up the show as we get ready on a draft weekend now as we go into rounds 2 and 3 on Friday and then the rest this weekend. It's Sports Map Radio.